I go in for a jumping knee strike. I land on my right leg. Have you ever heard a ligament ping? It's like a gunshot. And then I've got searing pain.
Yeah.
In my mind, I never questioned not going into that fight because I was never going to get the opportunity. I don't think at that point, it was a world title fight. Yeah. When would I ever get that opportunity again? I strapped my right leg up. I knew I was nervous about kicking with it. In the first round, I felt my meniscus tear. So I felt my whole left knee slide to the left. I've got to get through 5 rounds of Thai boxing with this. All I needed to do was just keep taking the fight to it. The only way that you can tell that I'm fighting with one leg is the fact that I'm not kicking.
Yeah.
It wasn't till the 3rd round that he was like, Jay, it's shit or bust.
Yeah.
You've got to start using your legs. And I was like, well, I can only kick with my left leg. I can't kick with my right. If I kick my right,
I'm out.
I felt like it was just going to completely come out.
Welcome to The Eventful Entrepreneur. I'm your host, Dodge, and I'm the CEO and founder of the Bournemouth Sevens Festival and the revolutionary Event Crowd, our new online events course. On this podcast, I speak to fascinating people who have all lived eventful lives. So if you want to hear more like this, make sure you subscribe, leave us a glowing review, and you can follow me on Instagram at Dodge Woodall. I reply to every single message. Janine Davis is proof that hard times create hard women. Growing up on a tough council estate with an abusive mother and an absent father, Janine had to get streetwise very quickly. She learned to stick up for herself and wasn't afraid to fight those who crossed the line. That fighting spirit led her to making a name for herself in the ring, becoming British kickboxing champion, world Muay Thai champion, and later a powerlifting and weightlifting champion. She was also a formidable nightclub bouncer, one of the toughest yet loveliest women I've ever met. This is the eventful life of Janine the Machine Davies. Janine, welcome to the show.
Hello, Dodge.
Yeah, how you doing?
I'm good.
Good, good, good. I'm really looking forward to this one.
Okay.
I'm going to take you on a journey. So let's roll all the way back. Where did you grow up and what made you get into fighting?
So I grew up in Wallerstown. That was the first 11 years of my life, council estate, and the Camford Avenue estate. And then the council moved us to East Howe, which is just an awful place to live in Bournemouth for me. I don't know if you know anything about East Howe and West Howe. Do you know anything about that
place? Not too much, but I've heard rumours.
Okay, so it was originally built for the gypsies,
What year are we talking now? 80s.
So, yeah. I was born in 72, so we were moved down there when I went to senior school. Of course, they don't call it that now anymore, do they? Mm. So I moved down there when I went to senior school, and that would have been, I left school 89, so, 83, 84, somewhere around then. And it was just, you had to not support yourself, but you had to protect yourself against the people that you're living with. And that mentality carries through in the people that I was living with there. There's a lot of things that happened to me on that estate. Got my arm broken by a 16-year-old, stamped on it. I got into a fight with him, actually. He was calling me names. That's where the name Gribbit comes from. So I used to get called Gribbit when I was a kid, Big Eyes. And I told him not to call me that. And he kept calling me that, and so I threatened to thump him, as you do, but I was only a 12-year-old little girl. And he called me again, so I thought, well, I've got to see it through. So I went over and I punched him. I punched him on the arm. I don't know what I was going to do with that, you know what I mean? But then he cracked me in the face. So then I chased after him on my roller boots in my cul-de-sac, and then we got into a scuffle. But the neighbour in the cul-de-sac was putting a kid to bed and could see everything unfolding on the street, and saw him get up and stamp on my arm and broke both my bones. It wasn't until I tried to get up that I realised that the arm was broken. So that was growing up there.
Was that the start of your fighting history, would you say?
No.
Okay.
No, I didn't actually start kickboxing until I was 24 years old. I wanted to do it, but my mum said it's a boys' thing to do. So that was that. I wanted to do it when I was 16, but she said no.
Did you find you were more of a tomboy growing up?
I don't like the word tomboy.
No. What's another way of putting it?
I was just a girl that was into sport. You know, when you use that term tomboy, you're
put into a category. Yeah.
Okay, you're putting it into a masculine category, aren't you? I liked sport. Sport was everything to me growing up at school. That's the only reason I went to school.
Same.
You know?
Play sport.
Yeah, sport and art. Yeah. I didn't want to do anything else. I wasn't interested in anything else. I thought the teachers were idiots. But I also had a bad attitude. When you grow up in a house full of abuse, your attitude generally as a teenager is not great because you're just, your survival is anger because that's the only way that you're going to deal with everything that's going on around you, you know?
What sort of abuse you grew up with?
Physical, mental. Mine was a lot more psychological. My brother, physical, definitely. My mum used to buy packs of bamboo sticks. She used to talk to me about stuff. I don't know why, but she would do like a shopping run and stop off at Homebase to buy her packs of bamboo sticks to beat her children with.
Is that right?
Yeah.
What, have you done something? What, she whack you around where?
Back to the legs. Mm. My brother, the story I tell in the book, my brother was 6 years old and he went to school. He had welts all over his back. I mean, you got a little boy. Mm.
I couldn't comprehend taking a
bamboo stick to your little boy
at
six. So the teacher, he was getting changed for PE. And the teacher had said to him, like, you know, where'd you get those from? My mum, what'd you do? I took a pound note out of a wallet. Mm. It was just a pound note, right? Kids do, there won't be any kind of, I'm going to steal that. Mm. You just don't realise the value of anything at that age. So, it was, just fraught with that. But she's unwell in the head.
Did you know growing up she was unwell? Or was it only later in life you looked back?
I did sports psychology at university and there were a lot of identification and different disorders that I definitely was exposed to growing up as a kid. Mm. But when you're in like the war zone, all you're trying to do is survive that, you know? I got chucked out of the home on numerous occasions from the age of 13 and 14 years old. She packed all my stuff up one day and took me to a friend's house. I really didn't even know the parents that well and said to the parents, I can't deal with her anymore and just left me there. Mm. It was so embarrassing, really embarrassing.
Why do you think she couldn't deal with you? What was your attitude at that age? Obviously, things get passed down from parents. What was the knock-on effect for you, do you reckon?
I haven't got the answers to that, to be honest. I'm nothing like her. I don't have any of that bipolar personality disorder. Have I got effects of that abuse from a young age? Yes, of course I have. I find it very difficult to understand building relationships with the opposite gender.
Yeah.
I've got friendships. I'm really good at making friends because you learn how to do that very quickly when you're out on the street and you're trying to survive. Yeah. You know, you've got to do that. I'm very good at sussing people's behavior out very quickly because you have to learn how to do that very quickly as well.
Streetwise, very young.
Really, like, because you're vulnerable and you get taken advantage of. And did I get taken advantage of? Yes, I did. Mm. Has that made me the person I am today? Yes, I am. Mm. You know, I've got a brick wall around me.
Yeah.
I don't let anybody in.
Yeah.
Am I a bit moody? Am I a bit angry? Yeah, I'm all of that until you get to know me.
Yeah. But I've noticed that.
Yeah.
You get to know you, you're dead soft inside, and you've got this big cuddly
I'm super vulnerable.
But actually, the exterior of you, when you're there, you think, oh, she's hard as nails.
I've had to make myself.
Yeah, I'm sure.
To protect myself. I've had nobody looking after me.
Did you have a fatherly figure?
No, he left. He left when I was six. And then his input was to phone us once a year to tell us how much he loved us. Okay. I've talked about this on numerous occasions. Like, that wasn't for us. That was for him. Mm. That's guilt.
Mm.
Isn't it? You're not phoning up. I mean, love doesn't come from words, does it? No, it comes from action.
Yeah, of course.
You know? So, and the reason I sat down to write the book, really, the sole reason is consequences, because he's just an arsehole. Mm. The last conversation I had with him was 2019 and I threatened to knock him out.
For what reason?
So... Right.
I love this, Janine.
Right. This is the God's honest truth. Yeah. So my brother has got a partner he's had two boys with, right? I don't judge anybody for what they want to do, how they want to earn their money. She's been an escort for 20 years, right? But he can't deal with
Who's
that.
Who's been an escort?
My brother's partner.
Okay.
All right? So they've got two boys together, okay? But they wanted to be together and Lee can't get his head around that. So that's fair enough, right? She's sleeping up, doing whatever it is she's doing with 10 men a day, whatever. That's her bag.
Yeah.
But what she was doing, she'd befriended my dad.
Yeah.
And my dad, he's very much a 1970s misogynistic, sexist character, always posting pictures of women's tits and their asses. And when I told him I was a sports therapist, he said, "Are you giving happy endings?" I'm like,
"Is that what he said?"
I said, "I'm your daughter." Like, what? What?
Yeah.
I'm not.
Yeah.
So this is kind of paints a picture of who he is. And when she's putting up pictures of herself with her tits out or her lips done or whatever she's doing, he's all over it.
Yeah.
It's a bit embarrassing.
A bit cringe.
It really cringe. Mm. So my brother's phoned me up and he's gone, "Do you want to hear a funny story?" Right. And you know, you got siblings?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what it's like with your siblings,
two
right?
Two brothers and a sister, yeah.
Yeah, right? When they've got a funny story to tell, you're like, you can't wait. I'm in. Yeah,
absolutely,
I'm in.
Absolutely, yeah. Bring it.
This is going to be funny. He went, right, well, she's gone off to America now. The backstory of that, she was going to America and doing her escorting out there. And my dad had given her his address so that she could set herself up a bank account. Because I can't imagine you can get a visa to escort out in America, right?
Hello, what's your occupation? I'm a full-time brass.
It's true,
yeah,
right?
Of course, yeah.
Right. So it turns out that she, I don't know, she was poorly or whatever. So her mum had phoned my dad and my dad had gone and picked her up, right? Because she's not feeling well. Bearing in mind, he can barely spend a weekend with me, right? I think that's down to his level of guilt as well. And they've gone off on a 4-day camping trip together.
What, the your brother's missus and your dad?
Yeah. I said, right, my brother's like lost it.
Yeah.
He's in bits. I know, and she would do anything to get at him.
Yeah.
Right. I know him. And my dad, right, has got no moral compass. Yeah. Okay. I said, no. I talked him down. I said, I don't think he'd do that. Look, let's see, she's meant to be finding new friends and she's hanging out with our dad.
Mm.
Right. I think dad's just looking after her. Mm. It's all right. So he said, okay, so I've talked him down. A couple of days later, he said, do you want to hear part two? I said, yeah, go for it. Right? So.
go on.
So he's phoned her on FaceTime. Now, if you knew my dad, right, he's quite gregarious.
Yeah.
Okay. We are my father, right, in character. Yeah. So we're quite, you know, outgoing. Yeah, a bit out there, right? If you're sat in a car and somebody's FaceTime and he'd be in that, not a word. So they've talked on FaceTime for about 15 minutes because they're discussing the youngest boy, what they're going to do with him and that when she gets back. And he put the phone down and he was like, she's in the car with somebody. So he's phoned her back. Who are you in the car with? So she's very slowly turned the phone around and it's my dad.
Oh my God.
And my dad's looked out the window because he can't look him in the eye, right? Yeah. And then he said, all right, son, are you just looking for a cash point? Lee went, no, you're all right. Bing, put the phone down, because I can't defend him. We've got no proof, right? But then, to finish that all off, he blocked Lee, right? But he's blocked me.
Right, okay.
So I've messaged him and said, emailed him and said, you need to get in contact with me because I don't think your wife knows that you've been away on a 4-day camping trip with this, you know, person that lives her life how she wants to live it. If you don't contact me, there's going to be consequences to your behaviour. Right, so he phoned me up. All right, Janice, this stupid American English accent that he's got. Oh, I'm so busy, I'm this, I'm that. I'm like, I'll cut your shit. Why have you blocked me?
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Yeah.
Oh, I've done it as a family thing. No, you ain't. Because you've got, anybody that goes on Facebook knows to delete or block somebody, you've got to type their name in.
Yeah.
And then it asks you if you're sure.
Yeah.
So you've got to go, yes, haven't you?
Yeah.
Right? So you can't do it as a group thing. Yeah. Oh, I'm just family box, block all family. Mm. And I thought, oh, I just wanted him to know that I knew and I wanted to call him out on it. Yeah. I didn't care about his answer at that point. And then I questioned him about what he'd done with my brother's partner, ex-partner. Oh, and he got really defensive. I'm not going to be told who I'm going to be hanging out with. You can't tell me what to do. And I said, look, you've done what you wanted to do your whole life.
Mm.
I said, but Lee's emotional welfare is really important to me.
It's more important than the whole of this conversation. Yeah, okay.
I said, I've been mum, dad, everything to him growing up. I've been the person that he's come to. I've been the person to look out for him his whole life. So I said, I can't remember how it came about that I said, if you don't sort this out, I said, let me tell you something, I will knock you the fuck out.
And anyone listening, when you've got Janine in front of you, trust me, you do not want that.
And he said to me, I know. Yeah. That's what he knows. Yeah. He knows.
Yeah.
So that was the last time we spoke. And then he blocked me. He came to Britain, actually, just before the pandemic. And he went and visited her.
Didn't speak to you?
No. And then he travelled from, like, Brighton down to Tavistock to visit his brother. Didn't come and see me. So I just sat there after that conversation. I said, I'm done. He has never been held accountable for his behavior. And whilst I still protect him in the book, because I don't name him, I wanted everybody to know the person that he is. Just a waste of space.
What's his name?
Mr. Davis.
There's about four million out there.
You gotta be smarter than that.
So going back then, obviously there's a lot of, do you find there's a lot of hurt and anger with your dad not being there?
I think there's anger with both of them. How could we be afforded two individuals who were just completely incompetent to be our parents? No love.
Was your mum boozing when you were growing up?
No.
No.
No, no. But were we exposed to drugs from an early age? Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we grew up on a... Anybody who grows up on a council estate.
Everywhere.
You know, they're trying to... You know, you sit around your mate's house. They're trying... You know, I could transport myself to this room now. And I was 12 years old, listening to Lionel Richie. And the guy sat there and he's got this card up on his lap. And I know that he's skinning up behind it. Mm. You know, I know what he's doing, but I'm in it. I'm 12 years old. Mm. My brother, my mum used to hide the joints behind the sofa. Me and my brother used to find them and smoke them.
Smoke, yeah.
Of course. Yeah. You know, so yeah, we were exposed to that from a really young age.
And what was your movements from that then? When did you get off the council estate? When did you go, you know what, I need to get off this and make a break for myself?
Right. At 17. So this is like, right, at 17... Unfortunately, when you grow up in a house not full of love, right, you are desperately looking for that. That's what you go looking for. So anybody that pays me a little bit of attention, you don't pay attention to any of the bad behavior. Mm. Right, what you're looking for is that person to love you.
Yeah.
Right. So I ended up with this guy who I knew was weird, but he was paying me attention and I wanted that. I was 17. I ended up moving into his house with his parents and he used to spike my tea with speed and acid. We'd be sat there watching TV and I'd think, what are the traces on that TV? I don't know what was going on. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then I ended up getting pregnant.
At 17?
At 17. Wow. And you kind of go through, and this is where something, I never understand women that don't understand that they're not pregnant or they, you know, they are pregnant and they don't realize it until they have the baby. I mean, there must be all sorts of things going on with your body. And I did have a little bit of like, it's not happening. But that lasted all about 2 days. And I was like, right, wake up.
Yeah.
This needs to go because I can't be in, I knew I wasn't in the right place. Yeah. And there's no way that I was going to bring a child into the situation I was in. I could barely look after myself. Yeah. So we ended up buying a flat in Westbourne. Mm. And I escaped and I ran away and I left him. I just left him. Yeah, then I was just out there working in the hotels, just doing the minimum amount of work. I just wanted to hang out on the beach.
Yeah.
The one thing that I did do, I got heavily into, it was the 90s.
Yeah.
So I was into taking speed and pink champagne and, you know, that's where you found, for me and Lee, both of us found our community. And whilst you think you're having fun, really the pair of us were self-medicating.
Yeah.
Because you can't deal with the emotions. You haven't got the skill set to deal with your emotions at that point.
And the 90s were good, though, for music, right?
Man, come on.
And the rave scene come in. Everyone was going to club. It was the best.
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
It was like a religion.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
Freedom. Like, freedom.
Yeah, man. Mm. Well, just... And that taking ecstasy and having... Just floating about and getting wavy for, you know, 8 hours, 9 hours.
Yeah.
You'd be with your mates. You all time check. Right, when are we dropping? When are we dropping? We'll drop together. Yeah. And I'd go, right, laters.
Yeah.
And I'd be on that dance floor from 9 o'clock until 6 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. And I'd have like cramps and salt marks all over my body from all the sweat. But just had some of the best times of my life. I don't regret any of that at all. Mm. But in saying that, with my sporting history that I've achieved... Mm. Yeah, it would have been nice to have had a bit of guidance early on.
Early doors, yeah.
Because I do feel that I would have achieved, I don't know, maybe Olympic.
Yeah.
It would have been nice to compete in a team for my country. Yeah.
But what you've achieved, you know, has been pretty special what you've achieved. But, you know, you didn't have that guidance. You didn't have that mentor. You didn't have that someone who probably grabbed you and said, let's put you on this path.
We just had somebody give me a kick at the backside.
Or give someone giving you self-belief.
That as well. I've had to really work on that. Yeah. I still don't think I'm that good anyway.
Yeah.
I had that all the way through. There's that, what's it called?
Imposter syndrome.
Yeah, I carry that a lot. I almost don't want it to go away because actually it keeps driving me to be better.
I agree.
You know?
I like it.
Yeah, I'm 50 this year. And I'm still in a place where I want to learn.
You don't look 50, and you don't. Oh, the nick you're in, you don't look 50 either.
Thank you very much. Mm. I work very hard at that.
You do, don't you?
I work really hard.
Yeah.
So that
journey then, you're obviously raving and partying in the 90s, having it off, which we all did back then. Yeah. It was amazing times.
Yeah.
Did you then think, right, I need to get a career, or I need to focus on something? When did the gym really start kicking in?
Right. So at 21, I decided I want to be a personal trainer.
Yeah.
I remember going into the YMCA in Bournemouth. Mm. So I remember going in there and saying I wanted some information about the personal training. And the fella looked across the desk at me and went, you've got to be fit, you know. I said, oh, fucking shut your mouth and give me the information. I was so ballsy back then. Yeah. I mean, I'm ballsy now, but I got a little bit more, I'm a bit better at carrying myself.
Mature.
Yeah. I was right up in everybody's faces. That's when I started working on the door.
Yeah.
So I worked on the door, the Opera House. On the front door. Yeah. Mate, 21.
Yeah.
Ballsy. Yeah.
Very, very ballsy.
Yeah, no.
And that was when there's no SIA badge. No. These were bouncers.
Yeah, they were. They were like, right, who are we beating up next?
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, we're going out the back. I was like, oh, I can't hit somebody for the sake of hitting somebody. I don't mind sticking up for myself. Yeah. But they'd be all charging around out the back just to That's go and right. do somebody in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I grew up with all of that in the pubs and clubs in London. And they were bouncers. They were just like, who's the hardest people? Whack a bomber jacket on and away you go.
I know. But it was dangerous though, wasn't it?
Too dangerous because they got carried away. And majority, I wouldn't like to speak for majority. A lot of them were roided up.
Yeah.
And using speed.
And all of the above.
And all of the above.
Coke.
Yeah.
Just, you can't rationalise with somebody on cocaine.
No, you can't.
At all.
Mm.
Yeah.
What was that like for you then? Obviously, you're on the doors and there wasn't lots and lots of female doormen women back then. So you must have been one of the pioneers or one of the...
I don't know. Well, no, because the head door person in the Opera House was a woman called Amanda Paul. And let me tell you something, you did not mess around with her.
Was she tough?
Oh, yeah.
Is she still about?
Yeah, she is, yeah. She's on my Facebook, yeah. Yeah, she's tough. Really tough. She worked on the door up in Birmingham. She ended up moving up to Birmingham and she had a guy turn up on the door, put a gun in the face.
Yeah,
right?
Sure.
She was like, well, go and put your gun in the car and then I'll let you in.
Yeah.
He went, oh, all right then.
Ballsy.
It's like, what?
What was that feeling like for you, Janine, when you were on the door? Did you get a spring in your step? You're like, you know what? I'm earning good money. I'm enjoying this. I've still got the music in the background. I'm around fellas. I'm around people. I can meet more people. What was that like?
At 21... I got asked if I wanted to be on the door. I was working in the VIP bar at the time. And they asked me if I wanted to be on the door. And it was double what I was getting on the bar.
Yeah.
That was a no-brainer to me. But I did stand there like a deer caught in headlamps, which is how I carried my life.
Yeah.
So you chuck yourself into stuff and then try to observe it really quickly.
Yeah.
And then just find your niche in it. I was just doing it for the money.
Mm.
And then just finding my way of coping. Mm. And just not taking any shit from anybody.
Yeah.
That was it, really. Then I got offered an opportunity to go to America. My brother's girlfriend at the time was out in America. And she phoned me up. She said, look, dude, I can get you a job out here. Just nannying. I was like, and I didn't have anywhere to live at that time. I was just dossing on somebody's sofa. Mm. And I was like, you know what? I got nothing to lose. So I just got a ticket, my 3-month waiver, and I went out to America. Mm. And really, America was, it was life-changing for me.
Sure.
Because it gave me the opportunity to see a different perspective to my life.
Yeah.
And not getting caught up in shitbag jobs with shitbag money, you know. So I became a personal trainer out there. I did all my qualifications out there.
How old were you when you went out there?
22.
Okay.
And then I was 26. It was 1999 when I came back.
What made you come? Whereabouts in America were you?
I was illegal.
Illegal.
Yeah. I was in California. It was just time.
Yeah.
My brother had fallen out of a balcony, smashed all his face up. He fell, the spike through his face. It was time for me to come back and just be.
Where did he fall off the balcony?
That was in a party in Boscombe, one of those shitty flats. The thing is, right, the balcony was rotten anyway, and they'd been told not to go out there. But you know, it's like you're dealing with people off their faces on drugs and that. And the only thing that saved him was the fact that he double dropped.
Yeah. So he didn't know what
was going on. He fell, like, relaxed.
Didn't feel it,
No, so he's got 5 plates holding his face together.
You're
so
joking, mate.
No. It was, you know, the funny thing with Lee, and I think with the both of us, because of our life, we're quite resilient.
Yeah.
And like, when I got back, I met him in Barmed.
Yeah.
And he had, like, his jaw was all wired up and he had all elastic bands holding his face together. And he was just going around going, just being Jaws, you know? He just found, humor in it.
Best way.
Just found humour in it. Well, you have to, always.
So when you came back, back, what was the movement for you then? You come back and you said, you know what, I've got that under my belt. Did you feel like you were a new person when you came back?
Yes.
Fresh.
Yes.
Looking for a fresh start.
Yeah, but I did fall back into hanging around with the same community of people.
Yeah.
Falling back into that same get shit-faced at the weekend, you know, spend the week recovering. I wasn't really getting anywhere. And then I tried to go back out to America. I was thinking. So I applied for a visa. I thought I'll use my same. I mean, I don't know what, you know, you try to play the game, don't you? But you know, when you're playing with immigration
government.
And government, right? You ain't going to win.
Definitely not.
So I used my passport that I used to go out to America, and I thought, I'll apply for a visa.
Yeah.
I thought, well, if they give it to me, then I'm good to go.
Yeah.
So they gave it to me. And on the visa application, it asked me how long I'd been out there before, and I said 3 months.
Yeah.
Of course, I hadn't been. It was 3 years. Yeah. So I flew all the way to San Francisco. I got to customs, and they were like, oh, Miss Davis, have you been here before? And I was like, yes. And then they said, well, how long are you here for? And it was like that moment of time that seemed to go on for like half an hour. Yeah. And I was like, do I lie? Do I tell the truth? Do I lie? I went, 3 months. It's like a big X. He was like, go and stand over there. I was like, oh no, I'm in trouble now. So I got wheeled over to this guy, and he was like, right. So he looked at my passport and went, how did you get this visa? I said, I applied for it. I knew I was in trouble, so I was just trying to, you know, I'm trying to shock my way through it, right? He's going, oh, I'm going to ask you again. How did you get this visa? I told you, I applied for it. Janine, if you don't start telling me the truth, you're going to get in a lot of trouble. And I went, all right, all right. And I said, I lied on the application for me. And then he started bleating on about fraud and blah, blah, blah. And then I had to go sit around the back. And then I had two officers come start shouting at me. And I was like, listen, I'm not an arsehole.
Yeah.
I'm an idiot. I'm not a fucking arsehole. Yeah. Right. So you need to stop. Just put me on a plane, send me home. Yeah. I'll just go home. But for a brief moment, they were like, you could seek asylum. I was like, ooh.
What's that?
How can I do that? Can I? Like, your little brain's ticking over. And I was like, can I say that I'm going to get killed when I go home? I was really trying to figure it out. Oh, I was like, no, that's not going to work. So then they were tossing up where to send me to prison. So that they couldn't, I couldn't stay in the airport overnight. So they were tossing up whether to send me to Marin County Jail or Oakland County Jail. All right, Oakland, predominantly black.
Yeah.
Right. Marin, a bit poshers on the other side. It's where George Lucas, where he kind of founded the Star Wars.
Yeah.
Blah blah blah. It's quite posh over there. So they decided to send me to Marin County, but I'm sat in the back of the meat wagon thinking, oh my God.
Right, if I get American prison.
Right, if I get put in a cell with somebody that's a lunatic, I've got to get my shit together, right? Yeah. And I'd been kickboxing up until that point, so I knew how to throw a punch and that. But I'm just going to have to do them in.
Yeah.
So I thought, right, I'm geared up.
I'm ready.
So I get, they take my laces out. I mean, they put me through the works, man. Yeah. I take all my clothes off. I had to jump in the shower. They put me in uniform. I had towels, pants. I thought, I'm never leaving. Nobody knows I'm here.
Yeah.
Well, you know when you hear stories like people in prisons for like, you know, I was there for 25 years without trial. Yeah. That was what's running through my mind. So I ended up getting put into this cell, and the woman that I was in the cell with, she was cool.
Yeah.
And I gave her all of my stuff, and then I was sent home the following day, you know. But in that cell, they were like, you can go and get some sleep. I'm like,
not sleeping.
No, you ain't. So every time I passed out, I sat bolt upright, and I was looking across, and I was looking at the time, and then I sat there for a moment. I was like, I felt like my granddad was talking to me, right? And he was going, look what you've done now. And I was like, all right, I know. I was like, did I end up here? Yeah. I don't belong in prison. Oh, this is not who I am. Like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
Sort your shit out, Janine. Yeah. I'm like, all right, I'm going to sort my shit out. So when I got back, I just shut everybody out, got myself into a place where I just had a room, shut the door, started at the Bulldog Gym, which was in town. And then within 3 years, I was a world champion. So,
What made you really follow through on those 3 years to go, you know what, I want to be the best?
I actually, the kickboxing was an avenue for me to channel my aggression and my anger.
Yeah.
I was really angry.
Yeah.
So in a controlled environment where I could hit shit and hit people and not get into trouble for it. And then when I started at the Bulldog, I didn't have any intention of fighting, but they could see that I was strong.
Yeah.
I was supremely aggressive.
Yeah.
Although a lot of the time I was fighting the guys, I was fearful of it, but I was knocking people out, right?
I've heard, Janine. I've heard you banging blokes out for fun.
There's a lot of urban myths around me. There's a lot of urban myths around me.
There ain't.
There are a few stories. There's a few stories. But so the guy at the time, my coach at the time, was like, he kind of pulled me.
What was his name?
I call him a different name in the book. It's, you know, I don't have to disguise the fact, but I think I just want to protect people in the book anyway. But anyway, that's by the by. He pulled me to one side and said, I think we should think about you fighting. And I was like, oh, I don't know about that. And again, I didn't believe in myself.
Yeah.
So he set me up with my first fight, and I was like, right, okay, this is an opportunity for me to just show, because everybody would laugh and, oh, she ain't going to do it, she's a pillhead. And, you know, I had something not only more to prove to myself that I could do it, but then to show everybody else who I was, other than the party head, you know. And I fought at the time this girl called Gina Stone, who at the time was the current British champion, which is kind of unheard of for a novice fighter. Really, you get novices against a novice.
That's right, and they build up.
Right. Yeah. I was a novice against a girl that had fought 12 times. So she had a 12 fight record and she was a British champion. She'd had a year out. Right. So you could say she was a bit rusty, but really, I didn't care. I never cared about my opponents. I never sought them out. I never looked them up. I concentrated on me and what I needed to do, which was really important for anybody in sport, especially in fighting. The guys that I deal with will be online trying to look them up and see what they're doing. I said, all the time you're focusing on them, you're not focusing on yourself. Yeah. You need to focus on every single opportunity, but situation you're going to get to in the ring and decide what you're going to do to get out of it. And I beat her up. And that propelled me onto the fighting map.
Yeah.
They were already talking about me being British champion after the first fight. And I was like, what? I was like, oh my God. And that was a defining moment for me to say at 27, because I was 27 when I started fighting, which is really late.
That's late, isn't it?
Really late. Yeah. To talk myself out. I would never get that opportunity again. So if I didn't knuckle down and do something about it, that would have bypassed me.
Who's the one who really inspired you at this point to say, right, I need to focus on my nutrition, my training, my focus? Just you?
Me. Yeah.
And how many times a day or 10 times a week were you training?
6 days.
Yeah.
3 times a day.
Yeah.
On the beach. When I get people come to me, I want to be a fighter. Okay, fine. This is what I expect of you.
Yeah.
Because I don't expect anything less from myself. And if you don't want to do that, I'm not interested.
I'm not going to coach you.
No.
Yeah.
They don't want to train for anything these days. Yeah. They think coming to the gym 2 or 3 times a week is enough to get them in the ring.
Yeah.
And it's not. And then they get beaten up and they wonder why.
Yeah.
I was on the beach, running, doing my sprints on the beach. Then I'd be in the gym doing my weights, which 20 years ago, people were telling me they were going to slow me down.
Yeah.
I just tell them mind their own business.
Yeah.
I know what it did for me, because what it did is set me apart from every other female that I got in the ring with, because I was stronger than they were. So psychologically, I was already ahead of the game, you know?
What was going through your head before you won the world title?
That's a tricky one, because I snapped my knee, didn't I? Did you know that?
No, I didn't. But right. I want to hear.
So I fought an Australian for a Commonwealth title fight. Now, after my British kickboxing fight, it was tricky to find women my size.
Yeah.
I walk around comfortably at 80 kilos, which is quite big.
What's that, 13 and a half stone, 13 stone?
Yeah, which is quite big.
And muscle-y as well. Yeah.
So I'm not, most women that I fought at the weight at 72 were chunky monkeys. Yeah. You know what I mean? They were big women.
Yeah.
And he was like, right, we need to get you down to 66. I was like, I don't want to do that. He said, well, you either want it or you don't. So what do I do with that? Okay. So then I get myself down to 66 kilos. And let me tell you something.
That is tough.
It was hard. Yeah. And to sustain
that's 14 kg. That's 2 stone. That's 2 and a bit stone.
For my my
for
frame.
Your build frame, yeah.
For my frame, I looked emaciated.
Yeah.
I've seen some of the pictures. I looked emaciated. Mm. And my frame's quite big. Mm. But I did it. But I thought I slipped on the canvas in the Commonwealth. And I broke my wrist in the first round. And I managed to continue fighting. And it wasn't until I sat down in the corner that I said, I can't feel my hand. Mm. And he's like, well, what do you want to do? And I was like, well, you're the cornerman.
Yeah. Tell me.
I'm telling you, I can't feel my hand.
Yeah.
And I was Thai boxing. So it wasn't like I could have strapped my hand up and just use one hand, or I was kickboxing where I could just use my legs. She would have been clinch work. Clinch work is grabbing around the neck and throwing me around. I would have ended up with a deformed hand without any shadow of a doubt. And so when the doctor stepped in the ring, he pulled my glove off, and of course my hand's like hanging off.
Yeah.
And they were like, called the fight. It should have been a no contest, because you can't judge a fight on one round.
Yeah.
But the Australian coach, in the time it took him, he came across and went, okay, it's a no contest. But in the time it took him to walk back to the corner, he went, well, there's a lot of kicks thrown, didn't they? So they handed her the belt.
Jesus.
I didn't kick up a fuss.
Yeah.
It is what it is, isn't it, in sport? That's the way it goes. You take it on the chin, you get yourself better. But I rematched her for the world title.
Yeah.
And again, my body was under a lot of stress with the weight loss. And I was in the gym doing clinch work with beginners, which when you're training with beginners, you just don't, like, anything can happen.
Yeah.
He twisted me one way, my leg went the other way. And because my body was under quite a lot of stress because of the dieting, your ligaments and everything, they just become a bit more frail. Mm. And it twisted, my knee twisted, which was fine. I went and got it checked out and it was fine. And then 2 weeks before the fight, I was exhausted. And really what I should have done is gone home.
Mm.
And what you haven't got in martial arts is anybody that's got any kind of qualifications in coaching.
Yeah.
All they've got is the hand down from their previous coach. Yeah. There's no governing body in martial arts at all to say this is what you require to have.
What, back then?
No, even now.
Even now. Okay.
Even now. Mm. So anybody, you could come and see me for two boxing lessons and you can then set up your own school.
Yeah, okay.
Anybody can do that, which is a bit...
That's crazy.
Really crazy. Yeah, yeah. Which is really important for when parents come to see me and I'm teaching their kids that they ask me what qualifications I've got.
Yeah.
Because I've
You've worked, earned them.
Yeah, I certainly have. Mm. I've worked 20 years to get my education. Mm. But anyway, so I thought if I don't train today, I need to do it because I want to win. I need to, that one day I could have gone home, rested. It's not going to make any difference to my, in fact, it would have paid for me to go and rest.
Yeah.
I didn't. I go up into the gym. I go in for a jumping knee strike. I land on my right leg. I hear this massive, you've ever heard a ligament? Like
ping. Yeah.
Ping. Mm. It's like a gunshot. Mm. I was like, what is that noise? Oh, that's me.
Mm.
And then I've got searing pain.
Yeah.
And now I'm crying because I'm in quite, he made me finish the round.
Mm.
So he made me finish the round, didn't question about the fight being pulled, sent me home.
Mm.
I'll see you tomorrow.
Mm.
So I just went home. I didn't have that, for an ACL rupture, I didn't have that much swelling either. Mm. And I was able to kind of move around on it, which is a little bit unusual really in the grand scheme of things. So in my mind, I never questioned not going into that fight because I was never going to get the opportunity. I don't think at that point, it was a world title fight.
Yeah.
When would I ever get that opportunity again? So I went into the fight and I strapped my right leg up. I knew I was nervous about kicking with it. In the first round, I felt my meniscus tear. So I felt my whole left knee slide to the left.
Jesus.
And that made me really nervous because I thought, I've got to get through five rounds of Thai boxing with this. Yeah. They're going to end up calling, like pulling the fight. And I didn't want that. I knew I wasn't going to win, but I didn't want to lose either.
Yeah.
So I didn't know how I was going to do that. All I needed to do was just keep taking the fight to it. And when you, I find it quite difficult. I've got that fight on DVD at home and one of my housemates wanted to watch it over Christmas. I find it quite emotional watching it, to be honest. But when you watch it, you couldn't tell. The only way that you can tell that I'm fighting with one leg is the fact that I'm not kicking.
Yeah.
It wasn't until the third round that he was like, Jay, it's shit or bust.
Yeah.
You've got to start using your legs. And I was like, well, I can only kick with my left leg. I can't kick with my right. If I kick my right,
I'm out.
I felt like it was just going to completely come out. So that's what I did. And they called it a draw. And you can see me. And I'm like, oh my God, I've got the draw.
Yeah.
So the Australians decided to complain that much that they went back to the scorecards. The two judges had scored it a draw. The chief judge has scored the fight to me, so I got the decision.
Did you?
Yeah.
Happy day.
I fucking sat on my crutches, my face all battered the following day, going, why am I doing this still? It's great. I got the decision. But you know what they did after that, right? So the WPKL, which is a sanctioning body that sanctioned the fight.
WPKL, go on.
Yeah, WPKL.
What does that stand for?
I have no idea.
Okay.
I don't know. You've got different sanctioning bodies that govern fights.
Yeah.
And what you do is you pay for that sanctioning body for judges to come over and judge on the fights. Okay. So they decided, the Australians, again, they don't like losing, do they?
The Aussies don't like losing.
Right? Yeah. So she complained that much 3 months. We're now 3 months after the fight, right? They'd written a 2.5-page spread in this martial arts magazine. Mm. Horrible personal shit about me.
Mm.
Which, you know, I mean, like, you know, to be a true sports person, you just, sometimes your decisions don't go your way and just suck it up.
Yeah.
So they written this horrible shit about me.
What did they say?
I didn't actually, because it was in the shop.
Kind of, right. along the lines of.
They finished the article with, we were pleased to hear that Janine ended up in hospital with a broken knee.
Mm.
That was along the lines.
That kind of feel.
The disgrace in the UK and how deplorable it is that Janine's still carrying the world championship title and blah, blah, blah.
Do you wish you were around with the MMA days that there are today with the money floating around or that?
Do you know what, right? Yes and no. Because everybody is out for the money and they're not out for... I can't put my finger on it. Like, Molly McCann.
Would you fight Molly McCann next week?
Not next week.
No, if we say, 12-week training, would you fight Molly McCann?
At 50?
Yeah.
No.
Do you reckon she'd win?
No.
Do you reckon you'd give her a good run for her money?
Yeah.
If I arranged that fight, would you fight?
No, shut your face. Oh, you're so... Stop it. My God.
I would have some dough on that.
Look.
That would be a really good fight.
She used to come to my sessions when she was a kid.
Yeah.
She's actually in one of the... She's in my corner in the world title fight.
Yeah.
I bumped into her at a Thai boxing show I was judging on. And I was like, oh, I haven't seen her since she was a kid. I was like, oh, Molly, how you doing? She went, I'm 10-0, you know. I went, oh... Okay, I just turned around. I thought, I'm just not interested in that. Yeah. And you do, when you fight, you have to take on a personality. You do. Was I an arsehole back then? Yeah, I was.
Yeah.
Because you can't walk around, you know, tiptoeing through the tulips.
Yeah.
You're going to get beaten the shit out of. And if you're not carrying yourself with a belief that you can actually administer the pain you need to administer in the ring, you ain't going to get anywhere, you know? So, but yeah, the Australians, I kept the title. There's horrible shit about me on the internet if you go looking for it as well, that they've written about me, but you know, whatever. I kept the belt.
Mm. So what was your movement after that? You got the belt, you come world champ. Are you like, right, I need another challenge? What was your next challenge for you?
Right, so I, in my rehab, I was in the gym lifting and a powerlifting coach spotted me. He went, oh, you're quite strong. Do you want to be part of a powerlifting team? I went, sure.
Yeah.
So then I became a part of a powerlifting team and then I was then powerlifting. And that, do you know, in sport, when you've reached the highs of the high, it's really difficult to have that cut off and have nothing.
Yeah.
So you need a transition into something. Otherwise, it sends you a little bit loopy. So the powerlifting gave me an avenue outside of the fighting to still compete and still use some of my skills. I can lift quite well.
You can lift heavy.
Yeah, I can.
What was so tell me that journey then. So tell me the journey powerlifting. What's your record squat?
190 kilo.
Jesus.
At 75 kilo body weight.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So that's
kit,
like
in kit.
In kit, yeah, but still. In kit. But even,
I still got to lift it. 190
kg.
Yeah. Great, isn't it?
Bloody hell.
I know, right?
So that's hold on a minute. That's 3 plates one side. 3 plates the other side, 60, 120 plus the bar, 140 plus another 50.
Yeah.
My God.
Strong enough.
That is very strong.
Yeah.
And what else? So we break down powerlifting. What other lifts were you doing?
Powerlifting. Well, you know what powerlifting is, don't you? So powerlifting is your three lifts. It's your bench press, your squat, and your deadlift.
And your dead, yeah.
So my deadlift, raw, 185. Mm. I was doing that. I don't know. They have suits for that as well. I didn't understand the suits. I didn't like it.
Or you just pull him without a suit.
Yeah.
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 Put the weight there. Let me lift it.
Yeah.
Quality.
Yeah, literally. Yeah. So,
and what about benching?
So I got up to 110. I'm actually better at my bench now than I was back then, actually. At raw, I can do about 90 on a good day.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So you were benching 110.
110.
You were squatting 190.
Yeah.
And you were dead in 185.
Yeah.
Bloody hell.
75 kilo body weight.
75 kilo. That's like 12 and a half stone.
You know, the thing is that powerlifting, right? When you see the big guys lifting big shit, they need to be lifting big shit.
Because they're big.
160 kilo body weight.
Yeah.
You need to be lifting big shit.
Yeah.
When you see the smaller guys.
That's that more impressive. Yeah.
Yeah. That are 85 kilo and they're squatting 300 plus. Yeah. You're going, oh my God.
Yeah.
How are they doing that?
Yeah.
You know?
So when you knew you had a talent in that, did someone give you self-belief to go, you know what? You could actually compete here.
No, I just did it anyway. When I sat there with my world title belt and my medal, I went, I can do anything I want now.
Mm. Did you feel invincible?
I don't know about invincible, but I knew then that I could apply myself to anything and I could achieve anything, even if it was through fear. lifting weights, I'm not getting punched in the face.
Yeah.
It's easy, isn't it? So I used to, like, the guys I was lifting with in competition, they'd be really nervous. And I'd say,
why?
What are you nervous about?
Yeah.
I'm not getting kicked in the head today.
Yeah.
It's happy days
for
me. All I got to do is get on the stage and pick that up or not pick it up.
Yeah.
That's it. You know?
And what was your day to day like then? Well, how were you earning a pound note at this time? Because there's no
personal training.
Personal training, because there's no money in powerlifting.
No.
And there's no money in fighting.
No.
Back then.
No, but what it did is it gave me notoriety.
Yeah.
The fighting definitely, you know, when you're becoming a champion, people want to come and train with you. So that's what I used it for.
Yeah.
To build my reputation.
Yeah.
You know, and the powerlifting as well. But I love sport. I love sport.
Were
I need
you still,
sport.
Were you still working the doors when you were fighting?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. What do you want to know?
I've heard some good stories, you know.
I could tell you a few. Yeah.
Tell me a story on the doors where you had to protect yourself.
Well,
and you felt in danger, so you had to do whatever you did.
So there was a pub in town called the Lytton Tree.
Mm.
And I don't know if you know the Lytton Tree. Mm. It's the top end of Old Christchurch Road. It's not great.
Yeah.
But I worked there, and the guys that I worked there with were
proper.
Top class, right? And they didn't take any shit from anybody. So I felt good. I had a good team. But I stood on the door one night. This lad's turned up. He's got fresh grazes all over his face. He's obviously been fighting. So I stopped him. I said, fella, you're not coming in tonight.
Mm.
No. I said, you've been fighting. Like, your night's over. Mm. You need to go. No, it's from last week. I said, show me your hands. So he showed me one hand and put his other hand in his pocket. Like I'm an idiot.
Yeah.
Like I'd go, oh, yeah, right, okay.
Come on in.
Like, to insult my intelligence. Yeah. He said, show me the other hand. It was weeping. Yeah. I went, fella, you're not coming in. So he's gone to crack me in the face.
No.
Yeah? So my mate that I was stood next to, that I was working on the door with, Adam, he could bench 200 kilo at the time.
Yeah.
Right? So with no weight, he punched his arm out. That one rep max, 200 kilo punch, with no weight, it took the fella off his feet.
Yeah.
And he landed flat on his face, right? Bust all his face open, nose splattered everywhere. Right? So he's got up, he's now charging upstairs at me. He then started spitting blood at us all. And then he started charging upstairs, he's come to attack me. So I started looking for my radio, because I was gonna wallop him with my radio, right? But I couldn't find it. So instinctively, what I thought of doing was kicking him in the head, right? I've got my big Franklin boots on, and I kicked him in the head. But it was like the Matrix, because he kind of swept underneath it, right? And my mate looked at me, he's like, dude, what are you doing? I was like, oh, I don't know. It was the first thing that came into my head. Like, you know, when your survival instincts kick in, what are you going to do? It's just the first thing that comes into your head, you know?
Did you get people feeling that they could pick on you or say, move out of the way, love, come and get me in, or they look down at you or talk?
Sometimes.
Okay.
Especially fellas.
Yeah.
And usually, what they don't realise, 9 times out of 10, the people that are working on the door, they're kind of conditioned.
Yeah.
You don't, although some of the doormen that you look at these days, when I walk past some of the pubs and clubs in town, I think, oh my God, what could you do?
I know.
What are you going to do?
They've just got a badge and that's it. I know.
With their little notebook and pen. And their little badge on their arm.
Yeah.
I mean, stop it.
Yeah. But you know what's weird when you say that? Because you said you did double bubble. You're working on the bars and you got double bubble to work on the doors. And that's why a lot of people went to work on the doors. What's happening now? People are getting paid the same to work behind the bars. They're on the doors these days, pretty much.
I know. Well, this,
and
one
that's
of
why
the reasons,
there's a huge shortage.
Yeah. Well, one of the reasons I stopped working on the door was, it just makes you really cynical.
Mm.
And you're dealing with shitbags. You're dealing with the worst, you know, cases of society, you know, and people that are just... I mean, it does make you cynical. You're dealing with shitbags all the time. And I just thought, I'm getting paid £13 an hour at the time.
Yeah. Put your life in danger.
Yeah. And like, guys were starting to wear stab-proof vests and that.
Yeah.
My mate Gav, I'll tell you a funny story. Mm. So I think, although there was, do you know Bob Knowles?
Name rings a bell.
Well, I think he runs a lot of door courses, but he was selling kit and he was selling it out the back of his boot and that, right? So the guys were all jumping on it, stab-proof vests and that. My mate Gav, he's bought himself a bulletproof vest, right? So he's turned up to work. I went, Gav, where's the back? He went, it was too tight around my jacket. I said, so what? So what if you get shot in the back? I swear.
Is that right?
Yeah. You had to run away.
Backwards,
I mean.
Do the moonwalk.
Yeah. I did actually, I worked on the door in 2016 for a bit to help a mate out in Ashley Cross.
Yeah.
And I ended up, so I used to work on the door on Friday, Saturday night on my own.
Mm.
On your own.
By yourself?
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you care?
No. No, I don't care about that at all. Mm. But in 2016, I'm too old for this now. I don't want to be dealing with coked up twats that are giving me shit. Yeah. And then I've got to think about how I'm going to attack them, you know, because they're being arseholes. Yeah.
Do you feel like if you're going into a dangerous area, say if you're going through Brixton or going through the night, 2 o'clock in the morning, coming to a club, are you cool with that? Do you feel like, yeah, come on, bring it on if someone bring it on? Are you on guard? Are you always thinking on guard? Yeah.
Oh, who doesn't?
Yeah.
Who isn't?
Mm. But you've got a lot of stuff in your locker.
I have.
I know you can use.
Yeah, but I don't put myself... I've got friends that will put themselves in danger.
Yeah.
I was in Brixton.
Yeah.
Probably 2017. I was going to the Brixton Academy to see Massive Attack.
I love Brixton Academy and I love Massive Attack. I used to live in Brixton for years.
Oh, really?
Mm.
Right, so...
Yeah, 2000s.
We're for Bournemouth.
Yeah.
Right? So we come out of the train station. My mate's gone, oh, let's go up this side road.
Cold what? Harbour Lane.
I said, what? She said, well, let's go see if we might find a little restaurant up here. I went...
No.
Listen, I'll tell you what's going to happen when we walk up this road at 10 o'clock at night when it's pitch black. We're going to get raped.
Yeah.
Right. So you do what you need to do. Mm. I'm staying on the main road where I feel safe because you're not sorting that out. I'm sorting that out and trying to protect the both of us.
Yeah.
So no, you do what you need to do.
Yeah.
So she's like, oh, okay. Mm. So I'm very mindful of that when I'm with my friends. Very mindful.
And it seems to me, like, have you had relationships throughout this whole period? And how has your relationships been when you are... in the environment you've been growing up in? And
dysfunctional.
And dysfunctional.
Well, because you grew up in dysfunction, you end up in dysfunction.
Well, you kind of accept dysfunction.
Because it's normal, isn't it?
Okay. What does dysfunction mean?
Abusive behaviour. Yeah, all of that, you know. And I saw the danger signs. I really didn't understand about manipulative behaviour. But you do see the signs, but you kind of go, oh, it's all right. I've seen this. I can handle this. And before you know it, you're caught up in a situation you don't know how to get out of. And essentially, that's what happens. But it won't happen again, because I know that now.
If the right man come along looking for love, would you be...
I'm open to it. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
But I'm not desperate for it.
No.
I'm not desperate for it.
Have you got your guard up around men?
Always.
So how are you going to let a good man in?
He's going to have to work hard, isn't he? You're going to have to bring some game, man.
He's
going to
have to craft, isn't he? Is there a certain man you look for?
Not really.
Is it?
I don't really care.
You don't care? As long as they treat you well and kind?
Yes.
Okay.
And they've got a mind.
Yeah.
You've got to be able to talk.
Yeah, and have a laugh.
I don't, like, people assume that I'm into the meatheads. I'm not interested in that.
Yeah.
Most of those meatheads are just a little bit dull, aren't they? Yeah. And I mean that in the nicest possible way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Most of the time, the guys that are taking the steroids are carrying quite a lot of insecurity, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
I ain't got time for that.
Why do you think that is?
Well, they end up with body dysmorphia, don't they? There's that over-masculinity of what they need to be. So it's like a mask for them, isn't it?
Yeah. What, they want to be looking bigger
like
and
that
stronger.
Big, yeah, it makes them, you know, feel more manly.
Look from the outside looking like a man, but inside little boys' minds.
Yeah, massively.
Yeah.
So I don't care. You could be a comedian. I'd love a comedian. I'd love to meet a comedian.
There we go.
Just make me laugh.
Anyone out there's a comedian? Janine actually is really funny and a great laugh. So anyone out there, drop me a message. Yeah, drop Janine a message.
I'd love it.
Yeah.
Just make me laugh all the time.
Yeah.
I love watching comedians, don't you?
Yeah, I do.
I love comedians. Yeah.
Very much so. How's your life been these last 5-6 years for you?
We're just free. Doing what I want. Getting up. My day's full of sport, man.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah,
it literally
is. Yeah.
Like, I took up sea swimming. So my average day, I get up, I go sea swimming, then I go CrossFit, and then I'm in the martial arts gym.
Yeah, and 6 days a week.
Yeah.
Eating clean, eating good food.
Yeah, that's my day. I love it. Yeah, living exactly how I want to live.
Coming to Bournemouth Sevens, dancing all day.
I don't do that. So, no, I've been a couple of times. Oh, my God, it is carnage these days. Oh,
it's good fun, isn't it?
I've only got one day festival in me.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It gets messy, doesn't it?
Just go through. I want to know what qualifications you've gained.
Oh, my God.
Just tell me a quick run through. Let's not go deep in it. Just go through the qualifications you've gained.
I've got my book here, right? Okay. Because I've put it in the front of the book.
Don't read off the book. I want to off the top of your head.
No.
Top of your head.
All right. So I'm going to do it. It's right in front of me. Right. So I've got exercise therapy in International Sports Science Association. I've got strength and conditioning, sports massage, weightlifting coach, youth fitness trainer. I've got nutritional medicine, martial arts conditioning, sports nutrition, Thai boxing, specialist performance nutrition, certified fitness trainer. I'm a swimming teacher and I've got 3 degrees.
Wow.
Coaching, athlete development, sports psychology and physiology. I decided to do physiology. And then I did a master's.
Isn't that amazing?
It's all right, isn't
what
it?
What an achievement, Janine.
Leaving school with nothing.
Yeah,
I left school with nothing.
You must be proud of what you've done. Have you ever stopped and looked back and gone, you know what? I've done all right.
No. Okay. No, because you're on to, come
you're on
to
the next thing.
You know what it's like. What do you do? People say, oh, it's amazing, you've got a world title. I'm like, oh, that's odd news.
Yeah.
I'm on to
what's
the next. Yeah, what's next?
What's your next big thing for you?
I don't know. Do you know what? I have to be truthful.
Yeah.
I'm just standing still for a minute.
Good, good.
I've just suddenly realised that what am I fighting for now?
Slow down.
Like, I just need to just be still for a minute. Yeah. I'm all right.
Yeah.
I've done good.
Yeah.
I've done 20 years it's taken me. Yeah.
Has anyone around you in your family said to you, Janine, you've done really well for yourself?
My brother doesn't need to say that he's proud of me. I know that he's proud of me.
Yeah. Your mum?
Oh, fuck no, I don't speak to her.
You don't speak to her?
Oh, God, no.
When's the last time you spoke to her?
2013.
Is that right?
Yeah, I can't. The last time I went to see her, she's just a horrible human being. I don't know, how much punishment can you take from one person? I haven't done anything other than just being born. I went around to tell her that I passed my degree, and I knew I wasn't going to get any validation from her, but that's okay, because I'm good with what I'm doing.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to see a response. She couldn't even look at me.
Yeah.
Carried on wiping down the side.
Wow.
And then I'd gone round.
What's gone on in your mum's life for her to be like she was?
I don't know.
Because it normally gets passed down from your parents, doesn't it? And obviously...
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I've had people tell me that my mum's mum was very much like her.
Yeah.
When they were growing up. But I would stay with my mum's mum, and there were just happy times for me.
Yeah. So your nan?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Eating fudge, cake, biscuits, cocoa pops, cocoa, you know, all of that. Get back to mum, you're fat.
Yeah.
Like, get back on the cornflakes. Just put down all the time. She never came to see me in any of my sport. You know, what the town sports was everything to me as a kid. I just wanted her to come and see me do my thing, you know. And the one time she did turn up, she went, "You run funny." I was like, well, you're meant to run like that. And like, you're on your tip.
She said you run funny.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I was like, well, we won.
Yeah.
No, you run funny. You run funny.
Okay.
I thought, oh, I don't want you to come again.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what she did do. Right. Like, oh my God. Right. She's never seen any of my fights.
Yeah.
She got cancer. When was that? 2004, 2005. Family member had said, you need to go and see her. And I was like, oh, fucking hell, Lee. So like, I knew this had happened. Like, no interest in bring this up, but now we've got to play the dutiful children, go and look after them. So I thought, right, look, we're better than they are. We'll go and check on her, see what's going on. I said, but if she starts any of her stuff, we're out of there.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. He said, I'm with you, sis. Okay. So I started speaking to her around then, went through all the therapy with her and that. And I had one more fight in 2006 and I didn't want her to come. When I was getting ready for the fight, she's like, you're too thin. I'm like, look, mind your business.
Just leave me. Yeah.
This is what happens. I'm ready to fight.
Yeah.
I'm conditioned. But she ended up coming to the fight. And I lost that fight. I got a tag under my right eye. And I had an epiphany moment in the fight. I didn't want to be there anymore.
Yeah.
I wanted to get out. And fifth round in, I'd won every single round up to that point. It was an 8-round fight. The doctor called it. And I was like, I was elated. Because I knew that my time was up with that.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to be there anymore anyway. She said, oh, have you got it on DVD? Yeah, I've got it on DVD. So she had this portable, she was a truck driver, so she had this portable DVD thing she used to take with her when she used to go on her long drives. And she, I went around there and she played it back to me in slow motion and told me everything that I was doing wrong.
Oh, God. Okay.
Not.
Yeah. Well done on that. Shame.
How you doing?
Shame.
I just sat down and I thought, you are unbelievable. But I'm all right with that because I know she is.
You know, you said a minute ago, you slowed down, you feel like you're in a really nice place. What's a really happy day for you?
Sport.
Yeah.
Yeah. Walking my dog.
Calm.
Yeah. Doing what I want without any interruption.
Yeah.
There's plenty of those around, aren't there?
Where are you working at the moment?
Primarily at Phoenix MMA in Winton.
Yeah.
And I work at a West Hants Tennis Club.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Janine, give me one last thing that you want to gain out of life that's going to really make you happy?
Do you know what? There isn't anything else that's going to make me happy other than the things that I'm doing right now.
Lovely.
Do you know what I mean? I'm living my life exactly how I want to live it.
Yeah.
I'm doing the things that I want to do.
Yeah. Good for you, Janelle.
Yeah.
Do you know what? I've really, really enjoyed this conversation. You have certainly lived an eventful life. And I really appreciate you coming in and being so open.
Thank you for asking me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I said to you, don't be afraid to ask me anything.
I'm never afraid to ask anything.
I'm an open book, man.
Quality.
Anybody knows me, I'm an open book.
Janine, you're a superstar. Where can people, before we leave here, let people know about your book, Gribbit. Where can people find that, Gribbit?
Waterstones, W. Smith's, Amazon.
Wonderful. And where can people get you on socials?
Oh, shit. Gribbit. And then, Gribbit 2021 on Insta.
Yep.
I'm on Twitter. Oh, my God. Oh, that's
painful. Get away from that. Get away from that.
Just start working it.
Stick to Insta.
And then Facebook, Janine Davis.
Yeah, lovely.
Yeah, chat me up, man. Ask me anything.
Any fellas out there, any single fellas, Janine's waiting. Janine, you're a superstar.
Thank you. Thoroughly enjoyed it.
I really enjoyed that convo.
Thank you.
Nice one, Janine.
Thanks, Dodge.
Take care. Cheers.
Thank you. Bye.